was in a secondhand bookshop in Hamilton once, and I found this wonderful book written under the pseudonym Hopeful. And this woman wrote a book called Taken In, A Sketch of New Zealand Life. Now, I don't know how she could have called herself hopeful, because this book is just one big moan about how terrible New Zealand is. I'll read it out for anyone that's listening on the podcast. Christchurch is about as dull a spot as anyone could wish to pass their days in. There's very little amusement. Everything is horribly local. I understand there's a great deal of dancing among certain classes, such as servants, barmen, barmaids, loafers, shop girls, and a great deal of those sorts. I believe they are generally held in the back room of some hotel. The climate in New Zealand is a boisterous, ramping and uncertain one. The sun shines far more than in England, but it is more or less accompanied by high, tearing winds. You can constantly have days at all seasons of the year, looking as clear as possible with brilliant sunshine, but when you leave the shelter of your house, you find yourself bitterly chilled, and all that bright look is only a cold glare. The winds in the spring are terrible, accompanied by clouds of black, gritty dust. Each grain as big as a pin's head, which fills eyes, ears, and hair and all. And should you happen to have a nice pair of walking shoes finished with a pretty buckle, you will look down in dismay as you see the buckles almost lost to sight with the dust so thick on them. The Chinamen live very cheaply because their communities are composed of men bachelorizing together. They have no wives or children to support, as women are not allowed to leave China. They are supposed to be great admirers of the white girls, and occasionally a marriage does take place, and in those cases, it's usually an Irish girl who'll throw her lot in with them. There's a woman who would have been unhappy anywhere, and I love the way where she's being racist about Chinese. She just has a go at the Irish as well, and see if she can hit two sort of prejudices with one go. But the book is full of complaints of this nature. But you can contrast this with Adela Stewart. And another book I found in a secondhand bookshop in Auckland was a book written by Adela Stewart, who migrates to New Zealand in 1878, and she writes a book called My Simple Life in New Zealand. And she tells the story of her experiences of being in New Zealand in the 19th century. You know, she's quite optimistic, but in some ways her life was a hard life. And the land that they worked in, Katikati, very near where the sort of current issues are happening with our kiwi fruit, were the land that they worked, she and her husband worked there, was very difficult. But she lived a fulfilled life of enterprise and community, and she felt useful in New Zealand. And she contrasted that with her experiences. And you can read more about her, again, in the Dictionary of New Zealand Biography, which provides a really nice summary of what she did. And the book's called, My Simple Life in New Zealand. And just finally, the last case study that I want to send you off to your scholarship exams with comes from the New Zealand Historical Atlas. And it's a family called the Hardings. And I just want to finish on a bit more of a positive note. And this is what it says in the Historical Atlas about this family. Among the migrants who came to New Zealand in 1874 were farm labourers Edward and Sarah Harding and their five children. The family's interest in New Zealand may have been stimulated by an immigration agent's visit to Shipton in 1872. It was strengthened the following year by a letter from George Smith, who had recently immigrated, to their neighbour John Pinfold, describing life in Hawke's Bay in glowing terms. So there's chain migration happening here. On 4th of November 1873, an immigration agent held a meeting at Milton under Wychwood and expounded to an audience of some 500 to 600 of the virtues of New Zealand, superior to any other colony in the world. So you see all that propaganda coming through. It combines the climate and beauty of Italy, Spain, and Switzerland. Just 3 weeks later, the Harding family left London and the Inverreen. Their £65, 5 shilling passage was paid in full by the New Zealand government, which of course part of the Vogel plan. The Hardings stayed with the Smiths in Waipawa for 14 weeks while their cottage was built. 4 months after arriving, Sarah wrote home that their move was the best thing we have ever done for ourselves and children. They had plenty of good food, beef, mutton and pork. Working on the railways, again another Vogel project, Edward earned over 4 times what he had labouring at home. The real difference though was smaller, as some goods cost more in New Zealand. By 1882, they owned 144 acres of land and 175 sheep. John Pinfold and family followed the Hardings in 1874. 2 years on, Edward, John and George were all primitive Methodist preachers in the Napier area, along with Henry Cox and 2 other migrants of the Inverreen. They formed the Woodville Small Farm Association, formed to acquire bushland from the government on deferred payment. So there's a case study that illustrates so many things that we've covered this year. Chain migration, propaganda, and also community. And the Hardings also really question that idea of atomization, because they were an example of a group, of a family that clearly came to an established community. So can I finish by thanking the Minister of Mystery and Culture and Heritage for hosting us for these seminars. Hope we get to continue them next year. And also wish you all the very best for your scholarship exams. And don't forget those six skills, and to also not generalize about, over-generalize about any groups in this topic, but always look for the exceptions. Okay, thanks very much. Thank you.